5-Hour Tea with caffeine from green tea leaves. It's delicious, energizing, and comes in 3 amazing flavors. With 0 sugar and 4 calories, it fits your life. With its compact size and portability, it goes where you go. To the campsite, the hiking trail, the beach, without weighing you down. 5-Hour Tea. Caffeine from green tea leaves. Release your natural side. From the makers of 5-Hour Energy. For more information, visit 5hourenergy.com.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is One-on-One with Jasper Cole, Hollywood's bad guy, and so much more. Actor, talent manager, producer, and more. Now he's sitting down with today's top newsmakers from entertainment, politics, pop culture, and beyond. This is One-on-One with Jasper Cole.
Woo-hoo! All right. Howdy, howdy, howdy. And welcome to One-on-One with Jasper Cole. This is your host, Mr. Jasper Cole, and we are live at Temple Bay Studios right here in Hollyweird, California. Everyone, please follow us on social media. So it's now Instagram, Twitter is Jasper Cole Says, S-A-Y-S. Facebook is Jasper Cole, and there's jaspercole.com. There's a link to One-on-One on my website, and you can also check out all our past episodes. And we're now on like 30 platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, the whole thing. So everyone, I am...
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right.
What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made. Where did you get this? I'm talking to you, with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Beyond excited today because I am welcoming back to the show my former co-host, and now we're going to have Mr. Ralph Cole Jr. as a guest today.
Hello, planet Eartha.
Ralph, it's so great to see you.
Jasper, thank you for welcoming me back.
It's a little weird to be in this different space, and we're in this very intimate room, and it's very different than our last show we used to do together.
Yeah, this, now that I think about it, like, look at the different formats we've had. Now, I'm hearing an echo. Should I be hearing that?
It's probably your brain.
Okay.
It's probably, maybe take the headphones off.
This is what's... How is that?
This is fine.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
you can
obviously sound great. By the way, everyone, we're also streaming on Instagram right now at Jasper Cole.
Well, you know what's interesting, Jasper, now that I'm thinking about it, we've done several formats. When we first started out at GVB, it was audio only. We sat around a console table. Then we segued into visual when we went, moved on to Sunset. We
UBN.
Were at UBN at Sunset Gower and Sunset Bronson.
Right.
We got to do visual there. Then when you segued
then I went back to just audio.
Audio with One-on-One.
Yeah.
But didn't we
did some one-on-ones on camera.
Yeah, because Bill Alverson was a one-on-one.
Yeah, Tony Tripoli and different people.
So,
but then I went to audio because basically we got so many more followers on iTunes. And so that's what started happening.
Is that what prompted
that's
to
just,
do the
audio? And that's just on audio.
That's what prompted to
right.
run and just focus
but
on
everyone,
audio.
But everyone, if you're watching on Instagram right now, you can see Ralph is in his signature orange, as that is his color. And so anyway, it is so great to have you here. And you've had quite a journey in this last year. Yeah. Well, Ralph's whole life is a journey, and we're going to get into that as well. But I'm going to sign off on Instagram. I just want everyone to see the gorgeous Ralph Cole Jr.
Thank you for tuning in, Planet Eartha.
And we'll
Planet Instagram.
Yes. So there goes the Instagram, and I'm excited because I'm over 55, and I just did something technical. Yes.
Thanks to Brandon. helping us.
Shout out to Brandon Brewer, our producer, and to John Williams, who's behind the scenes.
Yes, JW.
Pulling all the strings.
That's right. It is. It's like a reunion.
It's a reunion. And also Dara Scully, Dara Zane now, we want to say she is in London and she sends her love to you.
Oh, thank you, Dara.
And to all of our listeners, who Dara was our entertainment dish with Dara for... Do you know we did that show for like 5 years?
Four or five years.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we started at GVB Audio, went over to UBN. We did Blog Talk for a while.
Blog Talk from different locations.
And like I told Brandon, we met so many people.
Yeah.
And a lot of people. And you know, your first premise when you wanted to do On the Set with Jasper Cole was to have people from all walks of the industry, not just actors. And I mean, I got to meet Greg Richman through you, Edward Jimenez. I mean, John Wetter. I mean, the list just goes
on. We also
on
had
on.
Some great industry guests.
Yeah.
Didn't we?
Well, that was one of the industry.
Like even actors that we loved and people like Bruce Vilanch and all kinds of people.
Cheryl Lee Ralph, yeah. Valerie Pettiford, Carlise Burke.
Yes.
I mean, the list just goes on and on and on
yeah.
of all the people we met. And then I'm like, you know, I'm friends with Jennifer Bassey now. That's thanks to you, Miss, you know, All My Children, Alicia Minshew,
yes.
Carolyn Hennessy. I mean, it's just like you exposed me to a lot of different people that, yeah, I might have met at some point. Chrissy Metz, hello.
Oh.
You know.
We met Chrissy before This Is
Us. Before This Is Us.
Right after American Horror Story.
She was a talent agent, a commercial agent.
Remember she and JW sang that. And do you know what's horrible about that is when the show went to YouTube, see, you can't have music. We don't have the rights on YouTube. So the two of them singing, I don't have a record of it. Because remember how amazing they were?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Because the world's starting to find out what a great singer Chrissy is.
Oh, yeah. And then with Dot Todman, their vocal coach. And
Just on and on.
I like that we had Chrissy on then and I met her then before.
Right.
She's a big star.
And she hasn't changed at all.
And which would be lovely if we met her now, too. But I like having the comfortability of a star like Chrissy Metz who will text me back.
Absolutely.
You know, or Facebook Messenger me if I write her a message.
Yeah.
You know, is it her? Well, yeah, I want to believe it is. It's her.
Because
I'm telling her things that somebody else wouldn't necessarily know. Or she'd have to be sitting in the room going, yeah, that's true.
Right.
You know, he did say that, you know. But that was all a great experience. So, and like I was telling Brandon, just getting to do this venue because I do film and stage and TV, you know, so radio is, I'm glad that we're audio today, but get that little bit of Instagram thing going.
Right. Because remember when we started it at GVB, we really didn't have a clue we didn't have any real set out. We didn't know what we were going to do. I had only been a guest on Tony Sweet's former show. And so it's funny, you can't create chemistry. And this is what we've learned as actors on shows. Also, you hear actors talk about, like the cast of Will and Grace will say, well, from the table read, we were immediately, we were connected.
Mm-hmm.
So I want everyone to know, Ralph and I have actually only known each other. This is our 10th year, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going into
our 10th year.
But for me, I think all of our listeners have that connection in life where you meet somebody and I really think I've known you for like 30 years.
You've always said that.
Right? I mean, it feels to me like, and we met, I was producing or co-producing a TV pilot called Just Like Family. I had a client at the time who was starring in it, and it was Marla Gibbs and Thea Vidal.
Garrett Morris.
It was
Frida Payne.
And it was a great indie pilot that we were all trying to put together on La Brea. And I just know I arrived for the table read because everything, I came in because my client Amanda was starring in it. So I really didn't have anything to do with the casting or any of that. So I came in for the table read and all of a sudden this guy walks in and from the moment he opened the front door and walked into the room, I was like, okay, this bitch is fierce. Now, what is this? Who is this? I don't know him. And then we started the table read and I was just like, this person is a star.
Oh, God. Yeah. And
where
has
he been?
You called Denise Boutte.
Yes.
And let her know that you had met somebody that we could potentially work with.
I said, I don't know where this guy came from. I've never heard of him before, but Ralph Cole Jr., and he's amazing. And so So, as a lot of you know, I have Newman Thomas Management. So I never go looking for clients. They either find me or people refer them or whatever. So I was blown away by Ralph's performance. That's just the table read. I hadn't even seen anything beyond that. So I emailed Ralph, and I was doing like a fishing expedition to find out if he had representation, if he was happy with his representation. So I was just kind of hinting around, and I had invited him to a screening of something that was coming up. And then I would go to the set, like I would go to the filming and see you, and you know, Ralph never mentioned anything. So I just thought, oh, fine, that's fine. He's got his reps and he's happy with it. So we'll just continue on. And then I don't know how many, a week went by or 2 weeks. And then I think what happened was it went to spam. Is that right?
I had never seen the email. And then one day I discovered, and I thought, oh, fuck, he'll think I'm not interested.
Well,
but then when I saw, I got to see you on the set again. And
right.
Then we talked,
and then
I
you
said,
were like, oh my God, yeah.
I'm so sorry. Yes, no, I am totally interested and I would like to be with you. And then I looked up you, and that's how we knew, had our mutual friend.
We have so many mutual
friends.
Oh
God. Yeah. Get your stuff. Get your
Max Mitchell.
Max Mitchell.
Right.
And I was able to reach out to Max Mitchell and go, what do you know about Jasper Cole? And he gave you such a glowing recommendation.
Right. I paid him well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was really nice. And that was the start of it.
Yeah.
And we've stayed together all this time.
And we've been through a lot.
Through the highs and lows. You know, it's like,
we call it the yin and the yang. Yeah.
Exactly. Just staying tenacious and getting to do it. I'm glad that we have stayed tenacious, because all the people back 10 years ago, it's all changed for you guys too.
Everybody.
All you big guest stars and that used to just sashay in with your five-figure amount. You know, it would be like scale plus 10. It would be like, not for Jasper Cole. But those days segued for a lot of people.
Now I'm just begging to get a co-star.
You know, we're all just, yeah, it's so different. But the point of that was that you stayed with me,
yes,
rather than, you know, it's not working, Ralph. Let's, you know, because it doesn't always work. No. The chemistry.
Well, I've always told Ralph is a star, and he's going to the right vehicle. Well, first of all, the right vehicles have all come, and you've excelled in everything, and you're making it right now. Everyone's making it as they're on the journey, because we all know people who have had the series, and mm-hmm, that was great, and then the series is not there, and they have to continue, mm-hmm, and they're back on the. They're back on the trail, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but I do believe a breakout kind of role is coming for you. I thought your role on NCIS, is it still this season? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but it aired last fall.
Mm-hmm.
That was a perfect part for you. If those of you didn't see it, do you remember the name of the episode, Ralph?
Love Thy Neighbor.
Love Thy Neighbor. It has reran once already, but you know, that show will just continue to run. So everyone look that up, because Ralph played a really busybody neighbor who was a witness to supposedly a potential witness, or he had his theory about a crime.
That's to your point. There's a part that was totally perfect for me. I went through the audition process and got it. So that's why I am happy to remain tenacious and know that it can happen again, because NCIS is such a major machine that, excuse me, so
and
many
a very difficult show to get on.
Yeah.
It's one of the few shows where you pre-read still, and then you have to go to an in-the-room producer's callback, which I think there's like two shows that still do that in LA, you know.
Yeah,
everything's cast off tape.
There were a lot of people up for the role, and you know, we're all milling around the waiting room in the hallway, going over our lines. I went in and did my thing. So that just leads me to know, stay tenacious if you can, because that, you know, look, I was up against a lot of people. The showrunner brought his people in, and
right,
I still got the part.
Right.
And so
the point we're making is, when it's your part, it's your part.
Right.
And that's what actors have to realize. Like, and also, we're both kind of specific, you know, very specific in what we play. So I can't also, you know, play the everyday guy or whatever. Mm-hmm. So my stuff has to be very specific also. And like with your stuff, I mean, you have your group of people you, mm-hmm, quote, not compete against, but that are up against the same parts. And all of you could do the part, It's just a matter, do they want
the look? Yeah, it's the just look so many. I mean, we've defied so many things. I mean, my age is what it is now with my gray hair, and I still go in for the 30-year-old parts.
Yeah, you just worked on Jane the Virgin, and wasn't that character in the breakdowns like the 40s?
Late
30s,
yes,
the 40s?
And it just goes to show you Hollywood and actors and anybody, there's no rule.
No.
You know? It's just, there's no, why did I get the role of the sales clerk? And I'm happy now. You know, back in the days, I would get a role like a sales clerk or waiter or
dock
customer
or
whatever, no name. And I would be like, oh God, I really wish I had a name. And I thought, you know what? I'm glad I don't have a name this time. Because if my name was Reginald, you wouldn't know who I was during the show. As the sales clerk, I have a great scene with the star of the show. It's in and out. But I'm there. And that clip, I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but the way I looked and the way I felt doing it gives me the confidence now to say, like, when you have sent me various scripts or throughout the years and throughout the months, to have the confidence to say, you know what, I want to play the lawyer
right.
in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And before I wasn't like that.
No.
I was still like, no, I'm just going to be the androgynous,
the funny sidekick.
And the gay best friend
or whatever.
And on NCIS, I mean, I got to hold my own as one of the lead neighbors. And that gave me the confidence to know, like, yeah, I can still be my wild, wacky self, but with my hair the way it is now because the gray is in and because I own the fact that I'm 60. I love that. It's so fun to be able to say that, like, when you have sent me breakdowns and stuff and when I see 50 to 60, I'm like, oh great.
Right. And again, it just depends, because you, Ralph, you go into a room and if you know, sometimes it's 60s and they really mean 50s to play 60s, and then sometimes you have 70-year-olds, and it's just a matter, I mean, because Ralph's energy is so youthful in your body and all that, and you really don't look 60.
It's so funny how
Whatever that means.
It's so funny how just our society is about everything. I mean, we could go on and on about that, but it's so true what Jasper is saying. Okay, if there's a part for a 60-year-old, I read the breakdown and go, what kind of 60-year-old?
Right.
Because Hollywood and casting is still so ageist. Mm-hmm. And they feel, I mean, they have 50-year-old characters calling them elderly.
Senior citizens.
Right. And you're 55.
Although technically I turned 55, that you can get the senior discount. Bless you.
Absolutely. Go to Ross Dress for Less on Tuesdays, 10% discount. And you can get, well, you could always get a free breakfast on your birthday at Denny's.
Right.
But
well,
yeah.
I stopped going to Denny's after the last time. I went to 11 years ago in Palm Springs when I was only 44.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me, in Palm Springs, would I like the senior discount? And I was like, bitch, please. I was like, what? And Dennis was with me. So I said to the waitress, really? I said, so you think I look old enough to get the senior discount? And she just paused and went, mm-hmm. I've never gone back.
Oh, wow.
At 44 in Palm Springs, where the average age was like 107.
I totally go and get that.
Well, now I'm loving the discounts because, you know, but I want to take us back. I want to take us back to when this all started. Ralph is a native Los Angelian. How do you say that?
Los Angelian.
Thank you. Born and raised in L.A. He's an only child. His dad was a doctor and one of the few doctors that used to make house calls,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Up until he stopped doing it.
And then his amazing mother, Rose, was a school teacher.
And I still have Rose, thank
Rose,
goodness.
Who lives with Ralph and he takes care of.
I live in the house that she and my father bought.
The house that Ralph grew up in.
So, yeah, from 1965 in Windsor Hills.
Which Ralph calls the
Black Beverly Hills. Well,
right.
No, I didn't call it. That's what it
That's
was always.
That's what it was called.
That's
right.
What it was called.
But now, like,
and then
you
I thought,
said,
no, I want to say Windsor Hills. I don't want to have to, like, bring Beverly Hills into it. You know,
you did go to Beverly Hills High.
I did go to Beverly Hills High, and
because there wasn't a Windsor High.
No, and my mother wanted me to go out of district because she wanted me to get the best education
right.
possible. I'm so glad I went to school back when I did, because now it is so scary. I'd be scared to go to school.
Can you
now.
Imagine, like, if we had social media back in the day when we were growing
up?
Oh,
my God.
The shit I did, I would just be...
It's so different.
You were probably a good kid, but I was wild.
I was good, but still, like, yeah, it is amazing how we've all grown up and are going, like you said, these journeys. Yeah, so that's where it all started.
So it all started, and did you have an affinity for the arts immediately for TV?
Yes.
Comedy. Tell us who your influences were.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, seriously, it was I Love Lucy.
Right.
It was I Love Lucy and Father Knows Best. I can remember watching
Father. Now, you're the first person that sat here. A lot of people talk about Lucy and Carol Burnett, but no one's mentioned Father Knows Best. But Jane Wyatt and Robert Young.
And Kitten and Bud. But the oldest daughter. Her name escapes me. But I can remember watching Father Knows Best, and I cried during an episode because something had happened
molested.
To Kitten.
Oh. No, that would be today.
The remake.
Actually, she probably was being molested, but
I'm sure they're going to do a remake since like that's all they seem to be able to do now. Are remakes.
Why don't we pitch that? A remake of Father Knows Best with Sinbad.
With Sinbad as the father? Oh, that's hilarious.
Pulled up way back.
But I can remember watching Father Knows Best and just thinking, I want to do that. Yeah. I want to be on TV and do that. And it's so, I used to hesitate saying Father Knows Best and I Love Lucy because they're white shows and I should really be like, like I Spy and, you know, or good,
Flip Wilson.
You know, use Flip Wilson, which I did watch.
Yeah, Geraldine.
Geraldine, Chris Gone Fine, Ray Charles, and Nipsey
Sanford
Russell.
Sanford and Son.
Oh yeah, Red Fox. So I know
what's
about
happening now.
Those
should we
actors.
Just keep going?
Oh, yeah. We could just go, the list goes down, room 222, bitch. Okay, you know, 227.
Denise Nichols.
Okay. Oh, God. Room, yeah. So we could, Julia Girl. Okay. Working out
old
Diane
school.
Carroll.
Yeah.
So we could just
Love American
keep
style.
Going way back. Hazel, but she was white.
She was
Shirley
white.
Booth.
But she had black qualities.
Yeah. No.
Right. She stole.
She sang gospel. Maya Angelou, goddammit.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I
Love Lucy was my favorite, though. Lucille
and you know, Ball. I Love Lucy created the three-camera
exactly,
format, which you
the
love.
The multi-camera, which I love.
Ralph is no, he has done many multi-cams, so.
I love the multi-cam format, and I love the multi-cam format because you have a live audience.
It's so like it's, doing theater.
Yeah, and yeah. I love the instant gratification of applause and laughter from theater, and coupled with the fast pace of being on a TV set and just having to find your mark and make the jokes funny and sail. It's just such an empowering kind of feeling. But anyway, I've wanted to do that since the beginning. I mean, my through line is very just pedantic. I was 5 years old. I want to be on TV.
Were you precocious?
I was precocious.
Yeah. And you weren't shy, because a lot of actors were shy, you know.
As an only child, I wasn't that shy. My father was a doctor, so I used to follow him around. So I was like the young Dr. Cole. So I was precocious that way, with a good vocabulary and being smart. And when you're an only child, well, when I was an only child, I created a lot of things to entertain myself, like Gilda Radner said she used to do, and create the Gilda Radner show in her bedroom. And that's what I would do, and just have you know what I had? I had my father as my co-star.
Right.
I would sing Flower Drum Song and Gypsy.
And he would participate.
Yes, and he'd play the Jack Klugman. He'd play all the other subsidiary roles.
Your dad was sort of had performance.
Like, oh, definitely. Yeah. He had.
Your mom was more.
She was more reserved. She was
right.
A school teacher, very meticulously and immaculately wardrobed.
Right.
But my father did have that show business side to him too. So we sang, and I can remember. And I just looked this up the other day on Crenshaw. There used to be a cafeteria called Entra's, O-N-T-R-A, and they had several locations. But we live in Windsor Hills, so that one we went
to
was Crenshaw.
The Black Bear.
Exactly. On Crenshaw Boulevard. And we used to go there. I would get blueberry muffins and turkey and dressing. And I can remember being in there one day with my father singing, "You Gotta Have a Gimmick" from Gypsy, which is the stripper song. And he would be like, "Why is it that's the song you always gravitate to?" You know?
Little
like,
did he know.
I know, right?
What was coming.
But I loved it. And he encouraged me to do all that. My father always said to me, do whatever makes you happy, even right. if it's being a ditch digger. That's, you know.
Right. It'd be the best ditch digger.
Yeah, and just whatever made you happy.
That's good to know in case we are digging ditches.
Ditches, which I would do on TV, you know.
Right, but I'm it in real life.
Okay.
Whoops.
Yeah.
No judgment here.
No, exactly. But yeah, so my journey has been, I got a good education. I mean, when I think about telling
but
you this,
let me ask you though: when you went to, were you doing children's theater? Did you do drama in high school, or of that, or did it just happen when you left?
Well, I did plays, Easter pageants, and things. But in high school, I was more into band and orchestra.
Okay.
And junior high, I played the flute and piccolo. And in junior high, I was in some.
Those are sexy.
I did plays. What?
Sexy instruments,
the
right?
flute and piccolo. You know what I find, just as a segue, I always resented that it was considered a feminine instrument. And these are little things that
That I didn't know. I just thought more nerdy.
These are things that I grew up with, you know, different things I have problems with our society.
Really? It was always thought of as kind of feminine?
Yeah, like that and the oboe, perhaps. Oh. You know, whereas the trumpet or the trombone.
Oh, that was a tough.
Or the drums were the more, the you know, the or the tuba.
Well, actually, that's even more homophobic because the tuba, you have to blow really hard. And
I mean, yeah, it's so funny just the way our society views things. But anyway, I played the flute and piccolo and I was in the marching band. I was in the orchestra. I was in the Los Angeles Police Department band.
Right.
So I was musical.
So you were performing.
I've always been a performer. But it was in high school. Yeah, it was still band and orchestra. It was really in college, Pomona College in Claremont, where I got where I acted.
Where you started. But you were always funny, right?
I've always been funny.
Were you sort of the class clown?
I've always been the class clown. I've always been the talkative one.
Did you get the thing about talking too much in class?
I did.
We love Ralph. He's great, but he really talks too much.
Didn't I tell you that? Miss Quinn in English class, Emerson. Isn't it funny the things you remember?
And isn't it funny that would be considered a bad thing?
Well, she didn't write it on my progress report. She wrote it on my friend David Fields. David would do a lot better if he wasn't influenced by Ralph's talking. You know.
So where's David today?
David, I don't know. I lost contact with him.
Okay, David, if you're listening.
Yeah, David Fields from, you know, Emerson Junior High. We were on the bowling team together.
Oh.
But yeah, I've always been talkative and chatty, and I was most comical, I think.
In high school?
Yeah, I think I was the most comical.
Well,
so I've always been funny. My father was funny, and
Tell people back then? Because I would think, you know, I always thought if you grew up in L.A., because I'm, of course, you know, I transported myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, to LA. So I always wondered if growing up in LA, it must have been, if you had these aspirations, it must have been so amazing to just be like, I'm right here.
It was. That's why when I go to Television City, thanks to you getting me in for when I've gotten to go in for Young and the Restless, it's such a thrill. When I met
Sheila Guthrie.
I was like, could I just take a moment to tell you the first time I went in, how excited I am to be here? Because with my mother and father driving around Beverly Boulevard in Fairfax, I would see that big eye in the CBS television.
And all the history there.
Yes, and Lucille Ball. Yeah. And it would be like, oh God, she's probably in the building now. And
Sonny and Cher and Carol
Ed
Burnett.
Sullivan, Carol, you know, so who I got to meet one day. But that was such a thrill for me. So getting to go and be there at CBS Television Studio, now when I get to go by Sony and Paramount and CBS Radford and Raleigh, and when you're downtown at LA Center Studios down there, it's so fun to know, like, God, I passed these places growing up, and now I get to be a part of it. Burbank Studios, and I was born in Burbank. So, so my through.
So really in college is when you started theater and plays. And
yes. I was.
Did you start singing also in college? I mean, I know you were singing, but did you do musicals in college?
In college? Yes, I did Three Penny Opera.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I did musicals in college. I was in the choir with the Cathedral Choir School in fifth and sixth grade. I toured in England in different cathedrals.
Wow.
I was a soprano. So I started out musical and then So I've always been, I was born theatrical.
That's the word we're looking for.
And then it went musical, and then I was able to just segue into my plays in college, and always wanting to do TV. And then after graduating from college, moved to New York City.
And that's where I wanted to I wanted to talk about that. So what I found fascinating, but I understand it because you kind of, we all want to leave where we've grown up because we need to spread our wings and find ourselves. And so you up and left and went to New York City, which actually sounds like the perfect thing. Because you, because if you had stayed here and pursued the business, you were not getting that independence away from the family.
Exactly. That's exactly it. You know, it's like, you know, I think back, if I had stayed in L.A., where would my career have gone if I had really just stayed
here? Especially for
here
TV, right?
And stayed and pursued it. But I needed to get away,
right,
because I was an only child and my parents were very protective. and being their only child, and I understood all of that. But I've been very pragmatic all my life. I knew at a young age, it's like, okay, I will go to college for them. That's what they really want,
right,
me to do, is get the
your
degree.
Education.
I knew back in the 60s, like before I was 5 years old, I can remember thinking, okay, I'll do this school thing. I'll go to college. I'll go for 4 years and that's it. And then I'm moving to New York City.
And didn't you did you take a trip to New York City when you were younger?
Yes.
And you knew then also?
My father's sister lived
there. That cemented with you?
Yeah, that it was just exciting, and the subways and just everything about Manhattan.
It's so different than L.A.
Yeah.
That's important also. Because again, we want something different than what from what we grew up with.
It was all completely, I had never seen it snow before because I lived in L.A. I had never lived on my own. I'm an only child, so I always wanted siblings, so that didn't happen. But I wanted to be on my own. I mean, women I knew got to drive cross-country by themselves, and their parents let them do it, and my parents were so nervous, my father in particular. My mother was like, yeah, try it.
Go, please.
You know, and I mean, my longest trip
was like, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye,
Los
bitch.
Angeles to San Francisco. She was still protective,
yeah,
but, you know, it was like, with my father, you know, he loved me and didn't want anything to happen. But yeah, it was all that differentness stuff. I want to go to New York. I want to see what it's like there. I thought I would break right into TV commercials, and that didn't happen. But I studied and I worked hard and
auditioned.
I auditioned. I was a word processor.
You were a bike messenger, right?
I was a bike messenger. I did word processing. Met Carlise Burke, who is a famous actress right now.
A dear friend.
A very, very,
I mean, that's
friend.
Just an example where in life, you meet people when you meet them, and then you don't know what's going to happen. And then years later, you reconnect.
We reconnected here in Hollywood, auditioning together, and we've stayed friends. In fact, I showed, I won't say the name of the show, but Carlise is on the set right now,
right,
shooting a fabulous role. She looks fabulous with her haircut and
Did
her makeup.
Did she post something?
No, she couldn't yet.
Yeah.
She sent it to me. I laughed with her and I said, this is coming through a text, girl. I didn't see this on your Instagram page. She looks so fabulous.
Is she playing a diva?
She's playing a judge.
Okay.
Another judge again. But I laughed with her and I said, why can't you look like this every day?
Oh, okay.
And she and I, you know, we have a great joking relationship.
But that was it. I mean, you met her and she was...
She was in advertising. I was in working for a sales promotion company. We met on the elevator at the Gray Bar Building, 420 Lexington,
wow,
in Manhattan. And I won't go too far on a tangent. Her father tragically was killed. He was a subway motorman. And his death was posted on the cover of the New York Post. And I remember crying.
Not knowing her.
Not even knowing her. Just crying for the family that he went to work that morning and is not coming home. Not knowing Carlise Burke at all. Fast forward to, I meet Carlise Burke. Somehow, you know, we're nurturing our new friendship. It comes up that it was her father. And I was like, oh my God, I cried for you before
and
I even met you.
And she's an only child.
And she's an only child also.
Right.
So, and we were great friends in New York. And then our path, she moved to LA and I stayed in New York.
Right.
So we just lost contact. And then one day I was at home going through IMDb and stuff, and I typed in Carlise Burke for some reason, or I had seen her. I had seen her picture at the center on McFadden Street as it was doing stand up.
Oh,
and I was like,
you were like stand up,
Carlise Burke. I went, is that the same? And I looked her up, and I saw, oh my God, she's a major TV actress. And I just,
because like 20 years had gone by,
I had no idea. The next day, she and I reunited at an audition.
See?
I mean, it was amazing. And I recognized her from her back. She was bent over signing in, and I recognized her. We made the entire...
Did she have the long hair then?
She had the long hair.
Did she have the long hair when you met her?
No, because she had short hair
then. She had changed her whole
look.
Yeah,
her whole look was different. And we made the whole waiting room cry. Mandy Sherman was the casting director on that show.
What about Brian?
Remember,
yes.
And she and I ended up book. I didn't book that episode. She booked that episode. I booked a subsequent episode. But that was our reunion. And the same with Ronald Butler. Butler, another reunion, knowing him from New York days.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we knew each other in New York.
No, I never knew the Ronnie Butler that you guys knew each other in New York.
We knew each other in New York. And used
Ralph's other dear friend.
Yes, yes.
No, I mean, I don't mean like he only has two.
But they're really my... Yeah. No, but they're
I
really...
I said that like his other friend.
My other friend, I have two.
No, but I didn't know that you guys had known each other in New York.
Oh, we knew each other in New York. Because the funny story with Ronnie was 2004, I was auditioning for Scrubs. And I had just gotten my agent, and it's like, and I had done TV before, but not a lot. So 2004 was my official start. It was one line on the show Scrubs, and they were
"Don't make a meal of it."
Don't make a meal out of it. Brett Brenner, the casting director, said to me, and there were like 20 guys for this one part, and I thought, God, I can't believe they make us. They bring in all these people for this one line, four words, one line, sweets for the sweet. I went in there and did it. He said, "Do you have any questions?" "No, I don't." did it, came out, and Ronnie had gone in before me, and Ronnie said, "Oh, wait, I know you. You're the guy that always steals parts from me." Because in New York, we used to audition against each other for plays and things, and I guess I had booked several parts.
But, you know. Did you actually know him in New York?
We knew each other. We used to go to the same gym, American Fitness. And so that was in 2004, and that was our reunion, and 5 days later, Oh, and I booked the show. I booked Scrubs. And then 5 days later, my father passed
away. You took that part away from him also? I took that part away from him too.
And
then your dad passed.
And then my father passed away 5 days later.
Because okay, so from that point, we have to go back because, so Ralph did almost, you were doing time, 20 years in New York?
Mm-hmm.
I made it sound like you're in prison. But you,
Orange is the New Black.
Adam Lindo.
That. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, congratulations,
yes,
Adam Lindo.
On everything.
Yeah. And Gary.
But no, Lennon. So Ralph's father, you get a call, right, that your father needed some care. Because I'm trying to get you back. What got you back to L.A.?
Oh, what got me back to L.A.? I was performing in Portland, Maine in a play, Blues for an Alabama Sky. I was starring in this great play. And my mother phoned me. I mean, contacted me. I guess it would have been... However, text,
in those
email or whatever it was, and said, I had to take your father to the hospital. It was the day after my birthday. It was the day after my 42nd birthday because she didn't want to tell me on my birthday to upset me. So I was doing the play, got the news, and I had to finish the play because I didn't have an understudy. So I finished the play, flew home, and it was at that time, that was the year 2000.
The millennial.
Yeah, I'll go home and take care of my father and get the house cleaned up because our house was a mess.
Right.
He had let it get really junky. He was still a prominent physician, but... You know, it was just things.
That was not his priority. He was busy working.
Exactly. And my mother had moved to her own apartment in Marina Del Rey. They were married, but separated. So I went home in 2000 and got the house ready. My father was a physician, like I said. So I put him up in a nursing home for 6 months while my partner at the time got the house ready for him. He came home for Christmas of 2000, and I took care of him blessedly for 4 years until he passed away. We were holding hands.
In the house you grew up in.
In the house that I grew up in. And for those 4 years, 2000 to 2004, I only did one. I didn't do any TV then. I did one musical, La Cage aux Folles, in Long Beach, because my father got to see it. And that was 2003. He died in 2004. My mother had a stroke in 2004, so I took care of both of them for 6 months. Then Daddy died.
In two different places?
Yeah, back and forth, like from the marina, 20-minute drive. And then Daddy died in November of 2004, and that's when I decided to stay here and take care of my mother. And I decided, and I'm going to get on TV. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. And then I got that agent, Liz Hanley, at the Bi-Coastal Agency, and got Scrubs.
And Scrubs was your first job?
My first shot back, and it was so easy. I remember writing Liz, emailing Liz, going, "Oh, my audition went really well." And she goes, "Oh, the part is yours, unless it's
cut out." And you're like, "Oh, I've arrived!"
Like, really? God, that was easy. So yeah, I did get to book. The part wasn't cut out. Matthew Perry directed the episode. I worked opposite Matthew and Zach Braff, and who he and Zach and I share a birthday, and so that was the start. But yeah, then a year went by.
I know.
Daddy died. Did my thing, you know, was taking care of my mother and living life as a caregiver. And then the next show came around, Rodney, in 2005.
Sitcom.
And Rodney was a great multi. That was like.
Was that your first multi-cam?
That was my first multi-cam. I had so much fun on that fucking show. They let me do everything.
So you felt like when you walked on the set, you had, this was like putting on some old comfortable shoes.
Yeah, and it was my first time, but it was like, it's Father Knows Best and I Love Lucy. All like,
just watch out, bitch.
It's been
I'm
in
here.
My body. I am ready to go. Amy Peetz was on that show, and Amy Peetz said, you're the first guest star. And I think I was a co-star on that show.
Amy comes from Caroline in the City.
Okay, Amy said, you're the first guest star, co-star. You're the first guest on our show who has gotten exit applause. So that's how funny.
And you said, well, I get those in real life.
I get that at Trader Joe's.
I get that at Ralph's.
So I don't know what you're waiting for, girl. Okay.
Pay for less.
But, and Ross Dress for Less on
right.
Tuesday.
On Tuesday, yeah. Senior discount.
But, yeah.
You can find anything.
I was like, I got these shoes there, though.
They look good.
But I know, thank
stay
you.
Stay on focus.
But,
oh, by the way, listeners, you do see that we will segue.
Oh, my God.
So if you're ADD or if you have vertigo or whatever.
Oh, Planet Earth. Anybody just, listening to the show,
we don't
like,
care. We're all
fuck?
Over the place. I will bring it back around.
They're just talking, talking, talking. But that's what radio is. It's a radio fucking talk show.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, so you, let's go back because then you reconnected with Ronnie Butler mm-hmm. and you guys continue your friendship.
We
from
have
that point
a
on.
Great friendship now. Yeah.
Right. And then so you did Rodney. That
Rodney.
Gave you your. That cemented your knowing you could slam a multicam.
Did that, and the next thing was fucking Two and a Half Men.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, okay, bam, I am here and ready to go. And going out to get take your bow and everything, I was like, Curtain call, John
and then
Cryer,
they give you your,
Charlie
you've seen
Sheen.
Ralph on Rodney and
oh my God,
the bread line.
It just, so things started happening like that. I mean, you know me, I've always wanted more and it always just to be regular, but I'm very proud for what I've done. And when I look back these 19 years, everything I've done has been whilst caregiving. And
there's a real yin and yang to that with your career, right? Because like you said, your dad, you got Scrubs and your dad passed away a week later or 4 days later.
Five days later. I said to him, after I had gotten the audition, I said, Daddy, I've just booked a job on a hospital show. I'm not playing a doctor, but I'm in the cafeteria, but it's still a hospital show all the same. And he smiled and he was so proud of me. So, yeah, that was.
And you mentioned, because at that time you were with James.
Right.
So you had your first, James was your first relationship, right?
Right.
That you met in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys were together like 12 years.
11 years.
11
yeah.
years. And so when you moved back from New York to here, had that relationship ended?
It was.
Or was it transitioning?
It was transitioning and dissolving into something, segueing into something new because James was very supportive to me, but yet they're not his parents. And
you weren't Japanese.
And okay. And he wanted to. Okay. And there's that. And
listeners, there is a story to that.
Then there's a whole story.
The
and
day
a monologue.
My boyfriend turned Japanese.
Oh, and a monologue when your boyfriend turns Japanese.
One of the funniest things ever.
Oh
and
my God.
Ralph will perform that at
that
some point.
That shit is like.
But you guys maintained a really good friendship.
We're still friendship.
And you're still friends with Tushimaka, whatever his name is.
Takanori. And we get along fine. So it's all good. Yeah, I mean, I'm not one of these people. I didn't shut a lot of doors. I mean, there are people I hate and who I never need to speak to again.
Oh, and we know who those are. And they're listening.
But yeah, and I hope they're listening.
Right.
But yeah, so that was my life with James. And then I continued on here, just single. Doing my life and then now taking care of my mother.
Yeah. So when I met Ralph in 2009, right?
Mm-hmm.
2009, you know, Ralph was single and we started working together and then you started booking more parts and it was, you know, commingling
mm-hmm.
career or whatever. And then you and I had talks about, you know, we talked about getting older and, you know, are we going to be single when we're older? Are we going to still be with someone? What's going to happen to us? Blah, 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 and all that stuff.
Well, yeah, but just to say, you were with Dennis. So
right.
I
was with Dennis, but we both talked about the, you know, I always said, well, anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we would have these discussions about, Ralph was always saying, well, I'm keeping my house in Windsor Hills. And I was like, good. Well, you can open it up as a senior home for senior actors. I may be living there. But lo and behold, let's not forget, along the way, Ralph did some amazing theater, being one of them would be Sistarella.
Sistarella.
Which you actually started working on in New York.
Yes, right? In 1995.
Right. And you, and ironically, you got to come to L.A. as a, not as a local hire, no, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as part of a tour.
Exactly.
And get to come here and mm-hmm. do the show at the Pasadena Playhouse.
Exactly.
And your dad got to see that,
yes,
right?
Yes, he saw
that. Your mom and your parents saw that.
Yes, my parents.
And ironically, I saw that play at the time, not knowing that we would ever know each other, and I remember you in it.
And that's how Babalu. I met Cheryl Lee Ralph, Babalu. Yeah, my parents were there for it. I won the NAACP Theater Award for it, which my father accepted
wow.
for me because I was in Massachusetts doing La Cage aux Folles when I won that award. And so, yeah, he got to see that Michael Jackson, Robert De Niro.
Huge journey on that.
Dick Scott.
You kind of got to see that. You were sort of part of almost like a workshop. You got to see it from like infancy coming right. all the way together.
And I didn't even start. Wanda Houston, Rain Pryor go back before I do with Larry Hart with it.
And you're still friends with all these
and
people.
And I still know all of them. And they had started with some workshops. I joined them because I remember the cast of Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Oh, I love Smokey Joe's.
They did a reading of Sistarella in Manhattan. And I can remember looking in the breakdowns, the drama log or backstage at the time. It was probably backstage. Seeing the ad for Sistarella going, oh, God, all these big black gospel voices, I'll never be in that musical. Pass. And then I read the one part about Babalu, and I was like, but wait a second, I could play the fairy godfather there. That'd be fierce. And I did, and the rest is history. And I got to work with Yvette Cassan. So yeah. I did work with these black fucking diva voices.
Divas.
And that's why I call Yvette Cassan my black diva woman, because I was in 6-inch heels, so I was towering over her, and I would look down her black throat, hearing these amazing notes.
Lyrics.
Coming out of her mouth. Yvette and I are still friends.
Let me ask you, when did you starting to do performing and drag in parts? What was that beginning for you?
I guess I had started...
Because Babalu was androgynous, not drag, really.
I was in drag.
You consider that drag?
Yeah, because I wore a dress.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so he was supposed to be a chameleon.
Right.
And but
that wasn't your first.
It wasn't my first foray into drag. I had done some plays at West Beth Theater in New York. So I had done some meaty plays there. I worked with Jeff Weiss. I wasn't in drag for that though, but I played, you know.
Because you're a whole other person in drag. I mean, it's a whole other thing.
Yeah. And
because listeners, Ralph kind of has, if you look up Ralph on IMDb, which I hope you will because we want to keep that number low.
Exactly.
Ralph also has an amazing TV career playing drag characters on television. And separate from, you know, out of drag. So you have like two things going.
Yeah. It's like you playing, you know, the really gritty homeless guy towards playing the bad guy.
Right.
You know, it's still a dark kind of character, but there you have your
But it's
your
funny,
niches.
You tend to get to play darker, grittier people in drag.
In drag, yeah.
Out of drag, you're much more lighter and fun.
Lighter and funnier, yeah. In drag, I've always been I find the dead body. I'm the sassy one.
You're the tough one.
I'm the one in charge. I'm the tough cookie
A little more
one.
Street.
Street, a little more urban.
Street.
And,
but it's funny because
so
you're, but in your other acting career,
other stuff like,
you're so non-urban.
Yeah, it's so different.
You can't get a part on BET.
Mm-mm.
Right.
I did one of those jobs, Lord All Men Can't Be Dogs.
With Vivica Fox.
So I got to do it in urban.
But then Sistarella, people got to see you on a, when I say national level, but I mean, that was your big in drag kind of moment.
My big moment. Yeah. And it was like, and everyone thought I'd be nominated for a Tony if it ever went to Broadway, but because of
Larry Hart
and just problems that we had with the production, it never made it to Broadway. It did go to Germany and Australia, and I did the German production and was there for 5 months with the production. So I'm so proud of that. And then I have dementia too. So I have two.
Well, like, yeah,
I knew you were going
to
probably.
I was leading to dementia because I had, you know, I had seen this in the breakdowns, the casting breakdowns for this part, which was a Latino theater company. Mm-hmm. It was all Hispanic cast. And I knew that Ralph was you could speak some Spanish, but you probably phonetically. I don't even remember why I submitted you, to be honest.
You submitted.
It was just one of those weird things.
It was a great role.
Right.
So you submitted me for a great role, and you said to me when I booked the part, you need to remind the nation, you need to remind the planet Eartha how fierce you are.
The industry,
because you haven't done anything major like this in Sisterella stage. So you need to redo that. That was 2010.
And that was LATC. We'd only known each other a year.
Yeah, Los Angeles Theater Center. Yeah, I remember.
So Ralph went in and grabbed this part, basically.
And I remember, that's why you submitted me. It was for that reason.
Right.
Because the role of Lupe was such a major role. You were like, submit.
But it wasn't African American.
No, it was Hispanic.
I don't know why I... There again,
because
we don't know what...
Type.
I went with my gut, because it seemed like such a standout part. So Ralph gets this part. It was like just a phenomenal production. Everybody in it, Sal Lopez, the whole family. Ralph was amazing, standout. I mean, I think Ralph would say, right, you felt the work you put into that took you to another level as an actor.
Oh, it definitely was. I just got goose pimples.
Yeah.
I was nauseated when I got cast because I had 14 songs to sing, half in Spanish.
Oh, here we go.
In 6-inch heels.
Right, in Spanish.
Like, oh my God. And I remember at the audition saying to them, I said, you guys can't find any Hispanic up in LA to play this part,
but they wanted you.
They said, we want you.
That's right.
And I was like, wow. And I did it.
And Ralph is diligent about that's being the good student.
I worked so fucking hard on that show, and it was great. I did. That was 2010.
Right. And you got to meet Sal and these who became instant friends, and
they welcomed me into their family.
And then, how many years, when was that? I'm getting to the Christmas party when you met
Michael. Well, that would have been 3 years later.
3 years later.
After Dementia, because Dementia we did 2010, and I met Michael in 2013.
Right.
At their party.
Yeah. So Ralph has, you know, stayed in touch and was friends with all of them, went to their yearly parties, mm-hmm. and this was their year-end Christmas party.
Their annual tamalava party where they make tamales.
Right. So Ralph goes,
and
just as a regular night out, no big deal. And what happened?
I meet the love of my life, Michael Kremen. And Michael knew Sal and Urbany through CrossFit. And so that's why he was invited to the party. He and I, and the funny story is, they have a screen door. And 1 year when I was at the party, I walked through the screen door and I was so embarrassed. As you
I
would
mean,
be.
Usually it's a glass door.
And the
I
glass
mean,
door was open.
Hit door, yeah.
It was a fucking black screen door, went through it.
Did it fall down?
Totally. I went through it. And it
mangled it.
It mangled it.
Loved it.
And like Sal had to come and like, you know, bend it all back into shape and get it back on the track. So everybody laughed. We all
got
through it.
He's pulling focus, even trying to,
you know, in our home, I'm destroying their home. And
did you get applause?
No, I don't think so. I got more laughter, but I was horrified because you're in somebody's house.
Right.
And you've fucked up
damaged the property.
Well, the year I met Michael, we were all sitting in the kitchen, and he walked through the screen door.
He did not. I don't know. I've never heard this story.
And I laughed so hard when he walked through it, because we had all been just talking about me going through it. Then Michael walks through, and I go, oh, thank God the crown has been taken off.
Thank God it's a white person.
Yeah, and it's you now, and like, good. So that was our meeting, and we just met in the kitchen and liked each other and do what you do at a party and chatted. We exchanged numbers, and we're never apart from,
and let's say now, going back also, if I'm correct, wasn't Michael just coming out of a situation of his own, in his own personal life,
where he had lost his mother, and he had lost his partner of 17 years
that year, right?
A month before,
and this was sort of like his first time out. I mean,
he was out with his friend Tiffany Chung, and it was he had said to Tiffany, I'm ready to start.
I need to get out.
Meeting people and getting out now. And we met at this party.
I mean, you want to talk about an affirmation to the universe?
I mean, it's amazing. And I was just there to be at the party to get.
And what I was going to say about you is my point about Ralph is like, Ralph is indicative of like when you meet people when you're not looking. You know, Ralph was just. He wasn't shut down to it, but you weren't looking for it. You weren't desperate for it. You were just open and
just
living your life. And
taking care of my mother.
Taking care of your mother. And then you guys connected.
We totally connected. And Yeah, I mean,
but even that, you guys kept a little. Now you kept that secret because Ralph's good at keeping a secret.
We didn't see each other for 3 months. We texted every day,
right?
And then in the third month, it was right before my birthday. We went out for a dinner. We had done one or two dinners before, and then we went out for a dinner. And then it was really around my birthday, April 6th, where we really connected and right. started seeing each other. But then, all while we were dating, we didn't tell any. I never said anything to anybody.
No, because when I met Michael. It was after your play at the...
Bitches. Was it Bitches?
No, Gary Lennon's play at the... I forgot the name of the theater.
Right, Bootleg Theater.
Bootleg. So you and Michael and Stephen Grove and I, we went to...
Oh, El Cholo.
Cholo.
That's right.
And again, Michael was just introduced as just a friend of yours.
Yeah,
you know?
We had decided not to say anything, just to see how it would go.
Right.
And then Michael and I were... falling in love, and I was saying, no, we can't do this because I take care of my mother. And I didn't want to bring somebody into my situation because caregiving is a lot.
Right.
And my mother is doing fine. Her situation was different back then. I have to deal with every situation as it goes along. And but he wanted to join me on the journey, and we fell in love. Decided to marry.
Yes.
We married unbeknownst to everybody. In fact, what is today? The 13th. Tomorrow is 3 years,
3 years
that we had the wedding party. On Valentine's Day. And Michael and I got married January 28th, 2016. And we just started doing it. And then he moved in. Huh?
Doing it?
Glad
you waited until you were married, which is a good Christian lady.
We did things before the marriage.
I would hope so.
But we did our thing, and he supported me magnanimously through my career and read with me and taped me for my auditions. And then, and helped me take care of my mother.
And Michael was, like me, Michael loved reality television. So we're just like the way Dennis and Ralph, they can't be around it, basically. And so Michael and I bonded over the housewife shows. And so Michael came on our show to talk about housewives.
Along with Dara, because they all did that entertainment dish together.
Yeah.
And it was lovely. And it was wonderful. And we cooked up a storm. Michael is a wonderful, wonderful chef. And we had the best life, and we created everything together. And then Michael was diagnosed with liver cancer in 2018.
What, in April?
In April. 2 weeks after
my birth. And this just came completely
out of the blue.
He had like some stomach pains.
Yeah. And so that was April 23rd
of, last year. Yeah.
of 2018, and he lasted for 7 months and worked very hard, diligently, valiantly, as you might have used that word before, to beat the disease. So that's where we are now. He passed away November 21st, 2018.
It's not even been 3 months
yet.
Well,
and
what I wanted to talk about was, because, you know, so many people are dealing with cancer. Like, I unfortunately just got word my first cousin has a brain tumor.
Mm.
He's 59.
Mm.
I mean, it's just, you know, everyone listening, cancer is just, you know, just everywhere. Because we talk about the yin and yang of life. At the same time last year, Ralph was probably working more than ever because on his career, I mean, you booked Snowfall and several other NCIS and other things that have a film and
boy culture.
Yeah. And so that to me is sort of the hardest thing to think about was you, on one hand, you're caretaking your mom and Michael,
mm-hmm.
but yet you're valiantly carrying on with your career.
Exactly.
And what I want listeners to know was that for dear friends and supporters of Ralph, we didn't know, which is you have to respect the people's choice to not tell people. So it's just in hindsight that we look back on the last year now and we go, oh my God, the stuff that you were dealing with,
mm-hmm.
and put on such a great face. Although I don't think you put it in a face. Like, I know you, and so I know you showed up on these jobs as you always would have, because that's you. But at the point was, the show has to go on, and that's...
I feel strong, like Lucille Ball had to go through back in the day when they were accusing her of being a communist.
Mm.
And one of her funniest episodes is Lucy and Ethel's dress shop. And it was during that episode where she was really going through the ringer and being questioned and being accused. And of course, when you watch the episode,
the McCarthy time,
yes, you don't see any of that. Of course, you wouldn't. That would be unprofessional. So, but the distress that she was, and agita that she was having to go through and still perform is the same thing that any performer does, and what I went through with Michael. And as you always talk about the yin and the yang, Michael and I were sitting waiting in therapy for his chemotherapy at precisely the time you called me on the phone and said, "Ralph, are you sitting down?" And I said, "Yes." I was sitting right across from Michael, and you literally said, "Are you sitting down? You just booked NCIS. Michael, we're ready for you." I mean, it literally happened like that. I was on the phone with you going, "Okay, honey, I'll be in there in a second. I'm just going to finish this call. I booked NCIS. Oh, my God." And then he went off to do his thing. I was on the phone with you, hung up with you, went and got Michael. And it's like, "Oh, my God, how do you feel? Is everything okay? You're ready? Can you believe it? I booked it. Oh, my God." That is the kind of yin and yang you go through. And then you cry and hold each other. And
well, the beauty also is that looking back on 2018, like we said, there were like three or four really significant job bookings that you got to share that with Michael.
Exactly.
You know, so he got to, because he always was supportive. But then it was like, then he got to see it happening.
Yeah. And you know, just as a perfect close to this conversation, on the way here today, I'm still getting different memos and emails from people that he went to high school with and that I was trying to contact to let them know about Michael. And one of the people today sent me photos of him when he was in The Sound of Music and A Midsummer's Night Dream. And I knew Michael had performed before. We had discussed that. So it was fun to see my little guy doing his thing back in the day in high school performing. So he was no stranger to it.
He appreciated it.
He really appreciated it. He loved running lines with me. He loved...
You guys did great
self-taping me. He was so great like that. So I have, and you know, and then after Michael passed away, I got these great auditions.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about. I mean, everyone knows I'm a true believer in the afterlife and spirits, and I think our souls continue and they linger for whatever reason. But I mean, it was getting to the point literally like, how many auditions? You got like five in a row.
Like in a back-to-back.
In 2 weeks.
Yeah, and it was so amazing. And like, you know, I wish that would happen every week, but I knew it was Michael.
It was Michael.
I knew it was Michael.
And one of the parts, or maybe the first audition you got, was you being a caretaker, or a gay character.
It was apparently. It was a few auditions, and it was like I was so cocky. I said, "I'm booking it. This is Michael," because it was about a couple.
A gay couple,
and one of them is sick with some weird-ass disease, and he's the quiet one, and then the talkative, bossy one is the character I was auditioning for. But my first line was basically verbatim to what I had said to one of Michael's doctors 2 weeks prior in the ER.
Wow.
So it was so like, oh, God, I cannot believe I'm just like, what an amazing
life imitating
gesture
art
to get this particular audition.
And I felt, for me, like when I read the lines, I felt that was Michael's way of saying to you, you're going to soar in your career.
I believe that
it wasn't
too
about booking that particular job, but the fact it was that audition, it was so dead on parallel to real life that it had to be his way of saying, you're going to be fine.
I just felt that too, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a great sign, and I continue to get them, and I'll always get them, and he's a part of me forever.
Are there certain times when you feel, you know, Michael's around, or there's certain things that, you know, like, you know, my mom, we have the cat thing.
Oh, right.
And then my mom also has this thing with wind. Whenever I know when there's a strong burst of wind or whatever, I feel her presence. And Dara has a thing with her mom with birds, birds that show up. Everybody has a different kind of.
It hasn't quite been so. I mean, I remember the day he died, that morning, the smile that came across his face. And for me, that was such a great sign, knowing that He was going to be okay. He was there. He could hear me, because he had told me 3 years before, when everything was normal and just lovey-dovey, We were cuddling one day, and he just said to me out of the blue, I want you to be the last person I see before, when I die. When I close my eyes for the last time, the final time, I want you to be the final person I see.
Wow.
And it was so, like, I came home and wrote it down. I was like, God, nobody's ever said that to me before. Like, why would he do that? God, he loves me so much. And we just loved each other so much. So when the time came, I did try to be that last person.
You were.
And I basically was. I mean, well, not technically, because he died without me right there. I wanted to be right. I wanted him to die in my arms. But that didn't quite happen. But because I was with him that morning and saw that smile and him grab my hand,
you knew he was going to be okay. Yeah. And this is what I think all couples, you know, want to know and want to talk about too, is like, we're at the age now where we have to think about death, and we have to think about how do we want it to look like, and our what's going to happen. Make sure you have a will, and make sure you have all that paperwork together and all that stuff. And you know, when you're younger, you don't talk about these kind of things. So I'm just so glad that you guys had that moment together, and that I'm just very honored that I knew Michael.
Thank you so much. As I tell everybody, within 5 years, we created a lifetime of memories. So that will always be with me. I'll always cry, but he'll always be with me. I mean, I'm wearing his ring, his clothes, you know. It's,
yeah.
I want him to be with me. And yeah, I mean, has he come to me in a dream? I had one dream where he was in it so far. And in the dream, I was apologizing to him for the phone I bought him, because we both have our Android phones, and I bought him the S7 Edge, and he liked, because he had always been iPhone, and he liked the phone, and he really was so happy to get it. And now that he's gone and I'm having to use his phone, I hate the phone. And I'm like, oh,
you're
my
like, oh.
God, this is how your phone behaves. It's different. And because I have an S7 Active,
right.
And his is an S7 Edge.
But you bought it for him.
And I bought it for him, but like our two phones, he just, like, I'm so used to mine.
So now you're like, I had him give up his iPhone.
Yeah, and he kept saying how much he loved the phone, and he got used to it and liked it.
He hated it.
But now that he's gone, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is how your phone, like, just certain things, like, right. When you charge it, the way it cuts itself off, and I'm like, your phone is just annoying to me. And in a dream recently, I was saying to him in the dream, oh God, I'm so glad you're here. I'm really sorry about that phone that I got you. I had no idea you had to go through all of that. And he was like, it's fine. And that was the end of the dream.
Oh, wow.
So I want to believe, you know, and there'll be other times.
Oh, there'll be other times.
Oh God, when I cook. I mean, I talk to him all the time.
Right.
And I don't feel.
Well, that's how he's alive.
Yeah. I don't feel weird about it. I mean, I have his teddy bear he used to carry in his car. On the bed, you know, and I talk to him, and all this stuff that I'm having to deal with him now, this post-death stuff,
right?
And these emails with
it's
these lawyers, and
it's a lot.
I read it all out loud to him, like he's fucking there. I feel so funny sometimes, like, why do I do that?
Well,
I could just think about it.
No, because I think that means he's there with you.
I just feel like, because our bedroom, we have a big bedroom, so we each have our own desk in there.
It was sort of like your office and bedroom.
It was our office in the bedroom, so we were always across from each other, and he heard everything I would be saying. So now all these things that I'm having to deal with on his behalf and his father's behalf, who's
right,
still alive
right.
in Florida, I turn back around to the bed. I was like, oh, Pocket, so listen, you know, I'm, God,
yeah.
I laughed at myself the other day. I was talking to Mike, and I'm like, yeah. Fuck. I fucking called them and I asked them for the deadline. They haven't fucking called me back. I've given them so much time and now I'm under the wire. Like, Michael, why would they do this to me? Like, I had a full out conversation.
Good.
And letting him know my frustrations. It's like, I know they're your friends and I, you know, I needed the stuff. I didn't get it. And there was a deadline I had. And, you know, it's like, I talked to him about all these different things because
that's how
I just
you would,
do, yeah.
would have done, and he's there in spirit.
I guess one day I'll finally stop doing that. I mean, it's not like I'm mumbling around the house per se, but I do things in the bed, you know, and I'm thinking like, because I called him Pocket, because he was my pocket gay, and I'll turn and look at the bear and go, oh, Pocket, okay, so this BMW thing, that's being a pain in the ass. I said, well, I guess you heard the conversation. Well, you heard what I said, right? So, and I read the emails to him, because I used to read emails to him to see, like, how does this sound to you?
Right.
You know, or would
before
you
read you it? Before you laid people
before,
out.
Yeah, you know, does, is this coming
right.
across okay?
Before we send a passive-aggressive email.
But I don't mind that.
Good.
I like doing
it. It gives you comfort.
It gives me comfort, and I'm happy, and I still have my mother, which I'm grateful for, and I have you, and I have the career.
You have amazing friends around you.
Yeah. So I'm going to call Jennifer Bassey later, because she wrote me the nicest email. And
well, all of our listeners, everyone around the world, because we have always had listeners mm-hmm. from around the world, and we met so many wonderful people. And that's so many people reach out to you on social media. After Michael passed mm-hmm. as well.
And thanks to you, you know, we never posted anything. That's another thing. We never posted anything on social media because I didn't want to go through all of that. But then when he passed, things got posted.
Yeah.
And then I had to accept that and let people
know. Well, I mean, and that's what I want. You know, people have to understand. Everyone, you have to respect people's wishes.
Exactly.
Across, period. No arguments about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I can't believe this time has passed.
I know.
I mean, we could talk, and we will continue to talk. Ralph and I are going to lunch after this.
Exactly.
Early dinner?
Early
in Palm Springs, this would be dinner.
Okay, yeah. my God. Okay, yeah.
So thank you so much, Ralph.
Thank you, Jasper.
It is so great to see you.
I had a great time.
I know everyone's loving hearing your voice, and you're welcome. As I've invited Ralph to come here anytime, so he knows.
Yeah, I have.
Now he knows where we are.
Yeah, you know, the bus incident as well. You know, Rosa Parks got through it. I did too. So it's like
his voice will be heard as he has said many
times. Okay, thank
yes.
you. And yeah, maybe I'll come on when Bill comes on again. Bill Alverson,
yeah. Who's now a client at Newman Thomas.
Oh my God! Yeah, Planet Earth. We didn't even talk about to tell the truth.
No, there's okay. so many. Well, if Ralph and I started talking about our connections, he'll meet someone, I'll meet someone, we know each other, and
it has always been like that.
Yeah,
serendipity. But thank you for today. It's like old
thank
times
you for sharing
and
with everyone.
Thank you. This is like great healing for me.
Well,
because it's like old times. I'm getting back into my old habits and going to that reading yesterday where I saw Carolyn Hennessy. Remember all the readings I
Ralph
go to?
Ralph is a great supporter of other actors and writers, and Ralph loves to read the stage directions.
So
anyone out there, if you have a play or a script,
please, I will be your stage
Ralph
reader.
is affordable for stage directions.
I went to the Blank. Thank you for that plug. I went to the Blank Theater on Monday night. I felt like my old self. Because even if Michael were here, he might not have gone to that
Probably
with
not.
Me. Not every event he would go to
right.
with me. He didn't feel like he needed to go. We went to plays together
right, right.
and stuff. And at the Celebration Theater and all of that with Michael Taylor Gray and Michael Shepard. But I felt like in my... I thought about that play that you and I went to at Hudson as I was walking over to the Blank. I was laughing. I was laughing when I went to the Blank. But
I'm no stranger to the Blank stage either.
Listen, I was like, isn't the theater... Well, I think this is part of the theater too. You were like, no, I think this is pretty much it. But I was in such my element walking from my car to the place. I thought, oh God, I'm going to see this playwright who I haven't seen in 26
What's
years.
His name?
Oren Softy.
Yes.
Major playwright. 26 years, I did his first play at Columbia University. And we've stayed in touch all this time. Just like your friend, like these long-term people that we have stayed loyal to and stayed in touch
and
with.
And they come in and out of your life.
And co-mingling. This is why we're fierce.
If we say so ourselves.
If we say so ourselves. Over the millennials now. Mm-hmm. And like... As older actors say, I am too old to try to impress myself for these 30-year-olds. But you and I will still do that
mm-hmm.
because those 30-year-olds see what we have going, and the ones that are our age now know us from 30 years ago.
Right.
And that's a wonderful thing.
And what I'm also embracing is I'm loving having these amazing people like Brandon, these millennials that are my... producer now. I'm also learning what I can get from the younger generation too, because you know sometimes that generation gets painted with this broad brush mm-hmm. of like they're disconnected or they don't work or whatever. But then it's great to have like a Brandon who has all these fresh young ideas
and like just so accommodating to me. Here's an example of a millennial who I mean, sometimes millennials get a bad name because they're aloof and they don't know anything and they right. haven't had any history. But then you meet somebody like him who's accommodating and nice and treated me like a celebrity coming in here today.
Well, I think because he's born and raised in Oklahoma.
Okay.
And probably has a lot to do with it.
Okay.
Right?
And yeah. animals.
Yeah.
And, but, yeah.
Well, you're going to come back. This is going to be part one.
Yeah.
To be continued.
Yeah, absolutely.
We may do a Ralph Cole Jr. Miniseries.
You just never know. And like, I want to, you know, you've always given me the opportunity with certain guests who's going to be here that day.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they're going to be a guest. I want to be on that
yes.
show. You know.
Anytime.
So we'll, and I think, and Planet Eartha, don't think I take that for granted. To be on a major radio show, because that's what this is now. And that's what we do these days. And people are clamoring to do this. You know, we're doing this out of a studio in Hollywood. People are doing it at their kitchen tables or in a bathroom at home to make themselves be heard, because everybody wants their voice heard.
I know.
And they want to stay relevant.
Right.
As relevant as we can, because we're all, you know, it's just a new time. So I welcome it. I appreciate it. And I will be back.
And tell her we're going to be looking for you on Jane the Virgin,
Jane
which
the
will
Virgin.
Be coming out this year.
Yeah, we're on. They're on season 5 right now. I'm in chapter 92. They're,
right.
The episodes are chapter numbers.
NCIS will be rerunning. Snowfall will be rerunning from last season.
And I have a Boy Culture coming
Boy
out
Culture.
With Alan Broca
okay.
That I worked with before. He wrote a great part for me. I get to guest star on that, so I have a nice episode coming up in that. And I am currently in the film Untogether
yes.
with Ben Mendelsohn and his wife Emma Forrest for her writing and directorial. I don't know if it's her debut.
And that's out on demand, right?
That's out now, yes. It just opened a couple of days ago. I play the dog walker.
Yes.
So
Ralph and I were up for the same movie, different parts.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Homeless
we were
Guy
in the,
for me.
We
actually had a callback together.
And and then people bringing their dogs to the audition.
Yeah, we can't do that.
And it's too funny. I laughed at thought, well, I'm a dog walker in... Untogether, and I'm holding the dog in NCIS. Okay, so I'm
yes,
all
did.
About
and
the pet
and you know how
wrangler.
To work that dog.
Honey,
you worked imaginary dog in the audition, which helped you get the
That's
part.
That's what helped me get the part. Uh-huh. And then I got
well,
to...
Well, when we do our audition class, we'll use that
Yes.
<one.
laughs> Absolutely.
That'll be our next workshop that we do. Tell everyone where they can follow you on social media.
I am on Twitter. I'm at Ralph Cole Jr. and Facebook, Ralph Cole Jr. and IMDb, Ralph Cole Jr. and Instagram. Ralph Cole Jr. It's always
It's always Ralph Cole Jr.
Yeah. So,
well,
thank you, Jasper.
I love you. Thank you so much.
I love you back.
We'll see you soon.
Okay.
Everyone, thanks for tuning in to another edition of One-on-One with Jasper Cole. We love you. Peace out.
Bye-bye, Planet Earth.
Thanks for checking out One-on-One with Jasper Cole. Check out past episodes and get the latest as they're released. Subscribe today on iTunes, Stitcher, and YouTube.
5-Hour Tea with caffeine from green tea leaves. It's delicious, energizing, and comes in 3 amazing flavors. With 0 sugar and 4 calories, it fits your life. With its compact size and portability, it goes where you go. To the campsite, the hiking trail, the beach, without weighing you down. 5-Hour Tea. Caffeine from green tea leaves. Release your natural side. From the makers of 5-Hour Energy. For more information, visit 5hourenergy.com.
What does your morning sound like?
That's Daddy's little man.
Morning, Daddy. Grabbed your usual from Mickey D's.
Here's to making your morning routine a little better with a delicious breakfast from McDonald's.
Start your day at McDonald's with a refreshingly bold large McCafe iced coffee for just $2. Price and participation may vary for a limited time. Cannot be combined with any other offer or any combo meal.